Hi, I'm VOA's Alexis Strope with your worldwide news update. The Palestinian militant group Hamas and Israel traded blame on Wednesday over their failure to conclude a ceasefire agreement, despite both sides having reported progress in recent days. Reuters' Olivia Zelino reports.
Hamas said that Israel had laid down further conditions. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu accused the Palestinian militant group of going back on understandings already reached. Israeli negotiators returned to Israel from Qatar on Tuesday evening for consultations about a hostage deal after a significant week of talks, Netanyahu's office said on Tuesday. The U.S., Qatar, and Egypt have stepped up efforts to conclude a phase deal in the past 2 weeks. One of the challenges has been agreements on Israeli troop deployments. In a video released on Wednesday, Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz said Israel would retain security control of the enclave, including with buffer zones and controlling posts. Hamas is demanding an end to the war, while Israel says it wants to end Hamas's rule of the enclave first to ensure it will no longer pose a threat to Israelis.
That was Reuters correspondent Olivia Zelino. An Azerbaijani airliner with 67 people on board has crashed near the Kazakhstani city of Aktau. A Kazakh official said 38 people were killed and 29 survived. The Embraer 190 had been en route from the Azerbaijani capital of Baku to the Russian city of Grozny in the North Caucasus when it was diverted and attempted an emergency landing near Aktau. Azerbaijani President Ilham Aliyev said that while it was too soon to speculate on the reasons behind the crash, the weather had forced the plane to change from its planned course. Russia's Civil Aviation Authority, Rosaviatsiya, said the preliminary information showed that the pilots diverted to Aktau before a bird strike led to an emergency on board. This is VOA News. China and Japan agree to talks on security issues as they seek to mend ties. VOA's Christina Menenti has more.
China and Japan have agreed to set up talks on often contentious security issues. The two countries are seeking to improve a relationship struggling in recent years on a range of issues, from territorial disputes to the discharge of water from Japan's tsunami-wrecked nuclear power plant. Japanese Foreign Minister Takeshi Iwaya sounded positive Wednesday after meetings in Beijing with Chinese Premier Li Qiang and Foreign Minister Wang Yi. He calls the talks, quote, very candid and wide-ranging. I'm Christina Menenti, VOA News.
People have started gathering in prayer and are visiting mass graves in Indonesia's Aceh province to mark 20 years since the massive Indian Ocean tsunami, one of modern history's worst natural disasters. A powerful 9.1 magnitude earthquake off the coast of the Indonesian island of Sumatra on December 26, 2004, triggered a tsunami that killed around 230,000 people across a dozen countries, reaching as far as East Africa. Some 1.7 million people were displaced, mostly in the four worst affected countries, Indonesia, Sri Lanka, India, and Thailand. More than 170,000 people died in Indonesia alone. There is an undersea power cable outage in Europe. AP correspondent Haya Pandrani reports.
A power cable linking Finland and Estonia under the Baltic Sea suffered an outage. It prompted an investigation. That's according to a social media announcement from Finnish Prime Minister Petteri Orpo. He said the interruption would not affect electricity supplies in Finland. Estonian network operator Elering said there was enough spare capacity to meet power needs on the Estonian side. Authorities have been on edge about undersea infrastructure in the Baltic. Two data cables, one running between Finland and Germany, the other between Lithuania and Sweden, were severed in November. I'm Haya Panjwani.
A prison riot in Mozambique's capital, Maputo, left 33 people dead and 15 injured, the country's police general commander Bernardino Rafael said on Wednesday, as civil unrest linked to October's disputed election continues. A decision on Monday by Mozambique's top court confirming long-ruling party Frelimo's victory in the election sparked fresh nationwide protests by opposition groups and their supporters, who said the vote was rigged. While Rafael blamed protests outside the prison for encouraging the riot, Justice Minister Helena Kita told local private broadcaster Miramar TV that the unrest started inside the prison and had nothing to do with protests outside. About 1,534 people had escaped from the prison in the incident, and 150 were recaptured, Rafael said, adding that there were prison break attempts at two other prisons. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Alexis Strope, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and today is Thursday, December 26th. Here are some of the stories we are covering. A new report shines a spotlight on famine in Sudan.
So what we're seeing is an unprecedented deepening of the crisis.
South Sudanese put hunger and conflict aside to celebrate Christmas.
Christmas, it means the birth of Jesus Christ, and when Christmas comes, cleaning houses, painting houses, changing some things in their home, that make everyone happy.
And smallholder farmers in South Africa find a high-tech way to get better yields. A new hunger monitoring report used by United Nations agencies says Sudan's war between the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces and the Sudanese army and its allied militias is deepening and widening, causing a famine crisis. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
A global hunger monitoring group says famine is spreading in Sudan due to a war between the military and a notorious paramilitary group that's devastated the country and created the world's largest displacement crisis. The Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, says it's detected famine in five areas, including in Sudan's largest displacement camp, Zamzam, in North Darfur province. Dervla Cleary, Senior Emergency and Rehabilitation Officer at the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, tells the AP food security has worsened in the country.
So what we're seeing is an unprecedented deepening of the crisis.
Cleary adds, it's unacceptable in a world like today, where there's so much prosperity, that you're seeing people dying of hunger. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Despite facing economic hardship, insecurity, and the lingering wounds of conflict, South Sudanese Christians celebrated Christmas with renewed hope. Archbishop Justice Arama Badi, the primate of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, delivered a message of faith and unity during his Christmas sermon, as we hear from Sheila Pony in Juba.
At All Saints Cathedral in Juba, the Archbishop and Primate of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, Justin Badi Arama, took to the pulpit with a message of hope to a congregation struggling with multiple challenges.
Christmas, the message of hope. The people who are walking in darkness have seen a great light. Christmas is not only a time that we can be happy. Christmas is a time where we can reflect on the hope that God can give to each one of us. Hope to keep going. Hope to live for God. Hope to push ahead, even if you don't know what is going to happen tomorrow.
The Archbishop's words, in line with the challenges of economic hardship, insecurity, and the scars of conflict. Ajit Mary, a resident of Juba Town, says she came to join other Christians to celebrate Christmas.
So I first started with the security arrangement. You know, last evening, there was no security search on the road, which was something really good, because previously we could feel harassment. I was even worried how I will reach home due to a lot of checkpoints on the road. But I don't know what they did this year. There was no a lot of security search on the road. The difficult part is the economic situation. Really, people could not afford to buy fancy things anymore. And I feel like it's also a lesson to South Sudanese that they have now come to terms with the current economic conditions, the kindness of forgiving people.
Sari Santana, another resident of Juba Town, says he will celebrate the festivities regardless of his financial conditions.
Christmas, it means the birth of Jesus Christ, and when Christmas comes, cleaning houses, painting houses, changing some things in their home, that make everyone happy. We meet with our friends, talk with them, feel comforted. I'll chill with my friends. I'll go to my uncle's home, my auntie's home.
Even amid economic difficulties, South Sudanese are finding ways to celebrate with what little they have. Families gather for meals, chicken, cookies, and sweets shared with friends and neighbors. Sarah Ambrose, an entrepreneur in Juba, says she has closed her business to give time for Christmas.
Christmas means to me, it's first a blessing year. So the day that you can review all the thing that you have done meanwhile of the year and all this. So I'm happy to read this. If it is not God, we didn't make it up to today. Give God thanks for reaching this day. Those who we didn't meet for long, because, you know, when it's a Christmas, it's mean a holiday. It's mean we should visit each other. We see each other. So I'm going to spend my Christmas visiting family, friends.
Samson Ladu Lobang, another resident of Juba Town, says Christmas comes once in a year and he takes the occasion to relax with his friends and forget the past.
Christmas is just like a very big occasion in our family. So we can communicate and enjoy. But here in Juba, because of the economic crisis, there's nothing you can celebrate. But in the village, you group themselves, one, you slaughter a goat. You finish, you go to another family, slaughter a goat like that. Then they celebrate and they enjoy.
Archbishop Arama says, hope, joy, freedom and peace should be the aspiration of South Sudanese who have not seen peace for 18 years. For VOA News, I am Sheila Aponi, reporting from Juba.
Despite those economic hardships, inflation, and hunger, some South Sudanese have still found ways to celebrate Christmas. Thousands of faithful gathered in the Jungle State Capital Bor to find joy and strength. Dengai Deng was at St. Andrew's Cathedral of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan on Wednesday and has this report.
At St. Andrew's Cathedral of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan in Bor, Christians gathered to mark the birth of Christ. This year's Christmas celebrations come amid serious economic challenges, compounded by delayed salary payments for civil servants and the organized forces. The country's economic crisis, exacerbated by inflation and the ongoing effects of the Sudan conflict, has left many families struggling to meet their basic needs. Bor parishioner Philip Malwangding says that despite the economic hardship, he is grateful to God for the gift of life and for keeping him.
Though there are a lot of challenges facing the entire Christian across the country, some of the Christians are employees of the government, but they have not been paid for almost a year. But due to their resilience and their hope, that thing will change.
Another faithful, Grace Bol Makwey, says the economic situation is tough, but Christmas is a reminder that hope is never lost.
When a person is hungry, when the stomach is complaining, the whole body will not be comfortable. But also, God give lives. And also, God give happiness. Despite you are hungry, you feel happy, because God made this day for all of us.
Bishop Ruben Akurdit, Archbishop of Jonglei Eternal Province of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan and the Bishop of Diocese Bor, offered words of encouragement to the faithful. In his Christmas sermon, Akurdit acknowledged the hardships many faced, but urged people to remain steadfast in their faith.
It was not expecting people to turn up like this because of economic crisis in the country. People are really hungry. There is no money, no salary, and even the food production is not adequate. So people, I thought that people really are going to be bogged down, but with the high spirit God has given them, they have come in high numbers in different churches. All the churches are full.
Bishop Akurdit commended the South Sudan government for ensuring security along the highways and in the towns so Christians can celebrate in peace. He urged government to put the country's interests above individual interests and do more to address the concerns of civil servants and organized forces. Majub Bieltruk, the governor of Jonglei State, urged people to use Christmas to forgive each other, unite and live in peace, despite the economic hardships.
Our country cannot progress unless we are living in peace. It is the church that teaches us about peace and love. Let love ourselves, love our neighbors, and the other people who are living with us in the country. Tell your children not to fight among themselves. Tell them not to go to Murle areas and Mundari. Promote peace, and we, the government, will stand with you and support you.
South Sudan, as elsewhere, the Christmas season serves as a time of reflection, prayer, and togetherness. While the country faces many challenges, the hope and faith of the people shine through. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng, reporting from Bor.
Many South Sudanese who are spending Christmas away from home say they miss the warmth of family gatherings, traditional celebrations, and the local food. William Sunday Mabor has more from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Mayan Maluong is a South Sudanese who lives in Nairobi and has spent six Christmas seasons away from home. He says he recalls how vibrant Christmas festivities were back home in South Sudan.
I really missed, you know, in back home during Christmas time. In those days, we go to church. After the church, now we go house to house eating sweets allowed. We miss those ones. We also eat this kafif, these cookies. Those things, we really miss them. We also miss the freedom, because at home you have that kind of freedom. You can walk, you can stay anywhere you want. No police will ask you. But here, you cross the line, police will actually ask you.
Deborah Nyilwes, another South Sudanese living in Nairobi, reflects on how she enjoyed Christmas festivities at home.
For the past years that I've been here, you stay indoors. Sometimes maybe if you have a friend, you just go out, eat, and then you come back. But there's not that unity compared to how we are in South Sudan. You're actually alone. Your family is back at home. So there's that lack of family unity. You know, like, we are used to that unity, like, as a family and friends. We really, really face the unity among ourselves. We miss food. There's something called kabis that we eat during Christmas. Yeah, and move from house to house, which is not here. You don't go and knock at the people's doors asking for sweets and kabis.
James Okongo, another South Sudanese university student in Nairobi, says the festivities means nothing to him if he is not with his friends.
Always when it reaches this season, I really regret a lot, think of my family back home and how I would really wanted to be with them. But due to some situations and conditions, I could not really get access to go back home and celebrate with them. It has been quite long, but every time it reaches this season, I really recall those moments that we've been together. The feelings of being at home is always there. Home is always home. And I remember it's in Christmas that we get together and to share together the meals, to have fun and so on. And you will see great changes in people and so on. And to me, that's what at the moment I'm missing. And I always feel like to go back home to celebrate with people at home.
The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says the majority of the South Sudanese refugees live in neighboring Sudan, Uganda, Ethiopia, Kenya, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Kenya's Kakuma refugee camp hosts more than 448,000 South Sudanese refugees, one of the largest South Sudanese refugee population in the world. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabor in Nairobi, Kenya.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam, filling in for James Buddy in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 26th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Coming up on our program, a new way to cut down on the tons of plastic waste we produce each year. Find out what it is. Russia targeted Ukrainian energy infrastructure on Christmas Day, that according to Ukrainian government officials. AP correspondent Julie Walker has more.
Ukrainian officials say Russia launched a massive missile barrage targeting Ukraine's energy infrastructure, killing at least one person and disrupting heat for more than 100 on Christmas Day. Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky said over 70 missiles, including ballistic missiles and over 100 attack drones, were used to strike Ukraine's power sources. Zelensky calling the Christmas Day power attack inhumane. The country's energy minister said power operators were taking the necessary measures to limit consumption. Meanwhile, Ukraine's biggest private energy company said Russia struck one of their thermal power plants, making it the 13th attack on Ukraine's power grid this year. I'm Julie Walker.
Smallholder maize farmers in six South African provinces are using homegrown digital tech normally available only to commercial farmers to get the most out of their fields. Marisa de Klerk reports from the maize fields in South Africa's Mahaliesburg region.
Advances in agriculture technology have helped commercial farmers boost their yields worldwide. But affordability and accessibility issues often mean smaller farmers don't have access to the same tech. To bridge this gap, South Africa's Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, or CSIR, is developing a web-based system tailored for small farmers. It's called the Precision Agriculture Information System, or PIAS. Moses Che is the project's lead scientist. He says the platform works in local languages and uses artificial intelligence to analyze data that can help farmers make their fields more productive.
We have adapted soil pH, soil organic content, soil nitrogen content or information that no other system has gone down to that level to generate such information.
Data is collected with drones and other equipment and is then compared to satellite images to help farmers optimize growing conditions. According to the CSIR, the system could increase farmers' yields by up to 20%. Stefan Janssen van Rensburg is a digital farming expert with Bayer Crop Science, which was not part of the CSIR project. He says teaching farmers how to analyze the data is one of the challenges.
It needs to be affordable for farmers to be adapted. The second one is the educational part. Farmers need to be educated and trained and upskilled how to use the products, the best products, effectively.
Northwest of Johannesburg, aspiring commercial farmer Wandile Sikosana is still at the wow stage, but says learning about the current PIAS's capabilities and how it can benefit his maize yields hasn't proven too difficult.
They say that they can check the moisture in the soil, I mean, via satellite. It's like, wow. Yeah, no, I understand what it tells me, and it's not that difficult to use, I must say. For somebody who was born before technology, I can find my way around.
As Sikosana and his team rush to plant the last seeds of the season, he says he is hoping to use the PIAS data to help him choose the right fertilizer for better yields next year. Marisa de Klerk, VOA News, Mahaliesburg District, South Africa.
The United Nations estimates that the world produces over 430 million metric tons of plastic waste every year globally, with the largest source being single-use packaging. VOA's Vidalia Baraputri reports on a movement to cut down on such waste.
Trace Supermarket in Vienna, Virginia, near Washington, has everything a shopper needs except containers. That's right, no bags, no boxes, no bottles. If you want to bring something home, even liquids like cooking oil or shampoo, you need to come prepared. Visitors bring their own containers and weigh them, fill up what they need, and then buy their goods by weight. Mala Persson is the owner of Trace.
I got the idea to open the store, it was like 2018, so how many years, almost 6 years ago. I got tired of seeing so much garbage and plastic and trash, like single-use coffee cups, like single-use packaging, and I knew that less and less was going to be recycled.
Persaud opened Trace in 2021. She says, according to Greenpeace data, only 6% of plastic waste in the U.S. is recycled, and she hopes stores like hers can make a difference.
In the 3 years that we've been open, we've refilled 21,000 containers. That's just containers. That doesn't even count the things that are not wrapped in plastic. That's reducing the demand for that plastic bottle.
Shopping at a refill store might not be as easy as a full-service store at first, but customers say it gives them a sense of accomplishment. Phil Corcoran of Virginia has been coming regularly.
Oh, you feel good because, you know, you're doing your little bit for the environment, and the staff are very friendly and helpful, and they're very much into doing for the planet and the environment as well. So, yeah, it feels good.
In Tacoma Park in Maryland, another refill and zero-waste store called Fulfillery even offers their own self-made products. One of them is an all-purpose cleaning tablet made from recycled cooking oil. Fulfillery co-founder Rini Saha explains how to use it.
So you open this up and it looks, once you open it up, you cut it up, add water, and it becomes a really great cleaner. It cleans granite, it cleans wood.
Saha opened the store 4 years ago. She says changing consumer behavior, no matter how small, is key to reducing waste.
If the only thing they could do is carry around a reusable straw, that's still saving almost 500 straws a year, right? We just hope that people try to stop where they can.
According to the advocacy organization, the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, there are about 1,300 stores in the U.S. with a zero-waste concept, and this number is growing. Around half are refill stores, and others are stores that have a large selection of refillable items. Valdia Baraputri, VOA News, Washington.
The magic of the Christmas season is lighting up New York City, and nowhere is it more dazzling than in the neighborhood of Diker Heights, which is famous for its extravagant holiday displays. VOA's Aaron Raynan takes us inside this festive wonderland.
Diker Heights, a Brooklyn neighborhood, transforms into a holiday paradise every December. The streets glow with sparkling lights, towering decorations, and the cheerful sounds of the season. What began in the 1980s with a few dedicated homeowners has grown into one of New York City's top holiday attractions. For over 40 years, families have visited Diker Heights, turning it into a multi-generational tradition. Angela Ruggiero is a New York City resident.
This is a yearly thing that we do annually with all our nieces and nephews and family, and we come and look at the lights.
The displays range from classic Christmas scenes to playful characters like Frosty the Snowman, the Grinch, Minions, and of course, Santa Claus himself. Stasia Lee is a New York City resident visiting to see the lights.
It's really interesting to see the neighborhood so beautifully lit up, everybody with a kind of unique design. It really gives personality to this neighborhood.
Families stroll through the streets, snapping photos, marveling at the intricate displays, and soaking in the holiday magic. Frank Osorio is a New York resident visiting to see the lights.
Me and my wife are taking my son. This is his first time. He's 2 years old. And Diker Heights, even though I'm from Staten Island, Diker Heights has always been the place to come and celebrate Christmas and watch all the beautiful lights.
Months of planning go into crafting these breathtaking displays, which bathe the streets in colorful lights and draw both locals and visitors from around the globe. Davor Jukotic is a tourist visiting from Croatia with his family.
I think it's very nice. I think the people who live here, they don't have peace. Lots of people every day, but it's very nice, it's different, and I think it's very beautiful.
For a holiday experience that truly dazzles, Diker Heights is the place to be. Aaron Raynan, VOA News, New York City.
And that is it for this Thursday, December 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And we are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, wishing you a great rest of your week. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning.